So tonight is the second in a three-part series on self-compassion. Tonight's talk is called Forgiveness and the Gift of Imperfection. Each of these, it is a series, but it's each talk hopefully is a standalone talk as well. And if you miss the other ones, I think eventually they will be on the Insight Santa Cruz website to download or stream. So last week I introduced self-compassion, and in part I gave maybe a plea, an impassioned plea, to the importance of the practice of self-compassion and living a life with self-compassion. This is from Christopher Germer, who wrote the book A Mindful Path to Self-Compassion. A moment of self-compassion can change your entire day. A string of such moments can change the course of your life. So I wanted to just go over a few things about self-compassion that I touched on last time, and then we'll go on from there. I have found that the withholding, what I call the withholding of self-compassion, that is very common among many people, is actually one of the biggest obstacles on the path. On the path of our opening and flowering and the natural unfolding of our awakening. And while we are engaged in sort of chronic withholding of self-compassion, we tend to remain tangled up in a lot of habitual patterns. And we find ourselves in maybe very familiar, but unhelpful daily conflicts and struggles and resistance to our own being and our own experience. And we find that withholding self-compassion reinforces patterns of being lost in our mind stories and obsessions and thinking addictions, being lost in judgment about self and rejection, comparison and blame and inadequacy, a sense of deficiency and often a feeling of separation or isolation. And all of these various habits of self-rejection or self-criticism or judgment can become the basis actually of our identity. I find that in working with people on many levels and situations, that many people's identity and self-image and sense of self is actually crystallized or solidified around this kind of identity. And to become free, which is why we're here, to become free means we become free of this habit, sometimes in the scene called of selfing, of creating an image or identity of self. And to become free of all the ways that we continually cling to that and create that. And self-compassion becomes a way to actually very powerfully unlock that habit. And when we are withholding of self-compassion, we actually cannot be fully open and present. And that withholding actually inhibits a natural sense of strength and courage that is available. And through self-compassion, and really practicing it and having it become a natural expression, is really to learn about the fundamentals of compassion itself. And through the practice of self-compassion, we can find that inner openness that allows us to, what I might call, see the wisdom that is all around us. It helps us relax and open in a way that allows insight to naturally arise and allows us to trust something deeper than our neuroses. Most of us take refuge in our neuroses. Not a good idea. But we can start taking refuge in something deeper. the wisdom and compassion that is actually deeply embedded in our own being. And we can begin to learn what brings true happiness and contentment, and begin to relinquish the patterns that we've learned through family, culture, society, and according to Buddhism, eons of lives in the past. We can learn to see through our delusions and to find what's true freedom, true happiness. One of the writers and psychologists and thinkers that have been helpful to me along this is Brené Brown. Some of you may be familiar with her, and some of the things that I'm going to share with you were inspired from her book, The Gifts of Imperfection. And this is a quote from her. Love and belonging are essential to the human experience. As I conducted my interviews, I realized that only one thing separated the men and women who felt a deep sense of love and belonging and the people who seemed to be struggling for it. That one thing is their belief in their worthiness. It's as simple and complicated as this. If we really wanted to fully experience love and belonging, we must believe that we are worthy of love and belonging. And again, my experience is many people go around with almost an unconscious assumption that they are not worthy of this. And I want to just share a little side comment here. When I write talks, I handwrite things, and then I use word recognition thing on my computer. Mm-hmm. I read my notes or I read quotes. And the way it prints really a fun thing sometimes. And I thought of keeping a whole log of those things. Anyway, the last line here, we must believe that we are worthy of love and belonging, came out. You must believe we are worthy of love and baloney. that means something, I don't know. So, the other comment I'm going to make about the sense of being unworthy, that truly, as long as we believe on some level we are unworthy, we will believe that others are unworthy. When we begin to believe that we are worthy, we'll begin to know that everyone is worthy of this love and compassion. So one of the painful and perplexing conditions faced by many Americans, and living in the United States, being an American, it may obviously go beyond this, but I can at least speak for this country, is this, what I might call chronic perfectionism. A cultural perfectionism. And in some ways I would say this is possibly the greatest enemy of self-compassion. And this affliction, sometimes I call it the affliction or the tyranny of not being enough. Tara Brach, the Vipassana insight meditation teacher, calls it the trance of unworthiness. I actually prefer those, either mine or Tara's, to perfectionism, but they're longer and more awkward, so I'm going to use the word perfectionism. You know, most of the people I know and work with have some degree of perfectionism working in play in their life. It's really on a continuum from very little to a lot, and people find themselves along the continuum. You might find yourself at one end or the other, or somewhere in the middle. If it doesn't, what I say tonight doesn't relate to you too much, I can guarantee it relates to someone you love. So So some people, it's only really on rare occasions that they run into this sense of not being enough or doing enough or feeling unworthy or feeling shame about something they've done. Whereas for others, it's a daily experience, this daily experience of not being enough, of possibly I did something wrong here and there, I wasn't enough of this or that, I wasn't smart enough, clear enough, I didn't do enough. I was just reading some Pema Chodron, and she talks a lot about her being afflicted by this as well over many years. So some of us, I like to say, are able to keep closer to their perfectionist ideal. So the perfectionist has some sort of standard ideal that they're aiming towards. That's what perfection is. That's what it would mean. And they go for it. And some of them are the carrot, like the carrot of it is close enough they can almost smell the carrot. And the sense that if, you know, maybe if you work really hard you'll get there, but the way those carrots work, you know, that no matter how hard you work, it's always a little bit out in front of you. It's almost attainable, but not there. And that's what keeps our economy and capitalism going, I think. But there's a big price to pay for that, a huge price to pay, and I think many of us know what that is. I'm going to say others of us see the carrot of perfection, whatever we set up there, is actually being quite far away. And we feel quite inadequate compared to whatever our view of that is. And we might feel a certain sense of failure or resignation or self-doubt. We might feel wary of the inability to sort of keep up with that and see oneself chronically in a state of being inadequate or insufficient. And unfortunately, there's no rest for the perfectionist because it is chronic sense of not being good enough. And today's success, if there is one, maybe lost tomorrow. And so we can approach many things from this viewpoint of not being good enough or trying to be perfect, how we look, our appearance, our bodies, our image, our status, our performance, our intelligence, our clothing, our home, our family. It goes on and on. And even if you're somewhat rejecting of the conventional American ideal, you may have another ideal that you're trying to live up to that you fail to meet. And many people take on the spiritual journey in the same way. And this can unfortunately be encouraged by teachers and different practices. And I want to say the ideal set forth in spirituality is set even much higher than any kind of a deal of ordinary life. The ideal of that guy back there. So your shortcomings can seem even more intense, more great. And the pain of imperfection can seem more profound when people start practicing. I want to say I'm much less of a perfectionist than I was earlier in life. It's been a gradual process of releasing that. But I still see where it continues to play out here and there. I get triggered now and then, maybe a little more than now and then than I would like. And many people know the pattern, the syndrome of and many kind of situations like this where, for example, because I'm in the situation of getting evaluations. You know, say you get 10 evaluations, and 9 of them are quite good and appreciative, and 1 isn't. So it's that 1 that begins to consume one, or one you obsess about, or you feel some distress. And the other 9 kind of fade away because, again, that sense of I have to do it all right, I have to be perfect for everyone. Somehow it's not quite right if one person isn't satisfied with what I do. And I would say in the past, when I was more of a striver for perfection, sometimes consciously but often unconsciously, I would sometimes, you know, you actually meet that. You know, you try to do something perfectly and it comes off perfect. And it feels great. I actually wrote down here sublime for about 10 seconds. So even if you have a moment or a situation that feels perfect, it's completely unstable, and the next second it will be something else. That's the nature of reality and impermanence and change. So perfectionism, one of the things it leads to is disappointment over and over again. Over and over again. Someone I counseled had this... she had a very large family, you know, brothers and sisters and extended family and all these different groups of people, and she kept having this idea of the perfect family gathering. Big mistake from the beginning. And she would work really hard and she'd have this vision and she would cook and she would do this and she would do that. And then, of course, some family member would act out or not show up or do something or other, and she would end up being crushed, angry, hurt, when this perfection didn't pan out. I've actually spent many years of many holidays with a holiday perfectionist, a relative. Mm-hmm. Who is a holiday perfectionist, and I want to say that's to hang out with that is a minor form of torture. And that's a good way to ruin a holiday. I think you might know what I mean. So some of the other things I want to say about perfectionism, and some of this again is inspired by the book The Gifts of Imperfection, is I want to say that acting from an inner core of joy and creativity and wanting to do and express your best is not perfectionism. That's can be a wonderful trait of being alive. Perfectionism at its core is really about trying to earn approval and acceptance. Going about your life trying hard to earn approval and acceptance. So we adopt the belief system that I am what I accomplish and how well I accomplish it, how well I look, whatever it is, and how I am seen. Our culture, you know, really encourages this. And the drive to be perfect comes from a deep belief that if I am and do everything well enough, then I will finally be loved, finally worthy, finally safe, happy. And I can avoid or minimize the painful feelings of shame, of judgment, of blame, of loneliness once and for all. I'm going to read that again. The drive to be perfect comes from a deep belief that if I am and do everything well enough, that I will finally be loved, worthy, safe, happy, and I can avoid all those nasty, painful feelings of shame, judgment, and blame. Sorry. It doesn't work. And please note where you might get caught by this, somewhere in your life. It'll never work for many reasons, but one is because that's not where happiness and contentment will be found. Perfectionism is destructive simply because there actually is no such thing as perfect. It's an unattainable goal, pure and simple. The nature of change and flux, the nature of reality doesn't allow that. There is an ultimate perfection, but that's a whole different layer. The ultimate perfection is actually the pure and complete acceptance of imperfection. And perfection I want to say too is more about perception. It's really often a lot about we want to be perceived as perfect, right? And this is also totally unattainable since we cannot control that, no matter how hard we try. Have you ever tried? And sometimes we're in a situation where we really try to appear that way, and then someone criticizes us anyway. You know, I hope to give the perfect talk. And then, you know, someone, well, criticizes this or that. Oh, well. And perfection can have an addictive quality to it, because when we do experience the negative and unpleasant experiences of shame or judgment or blame, we are caught in the belief system that, well, I guess I just didn't work hard enough. wasn't good enough. I didn't do enough. And rather than question our logic, we actually become more entrenched in trying harder, trying what in that first quote I read at the beginning of the meditation, the subtle aggression of self-improvement, until I'll finally get it, I'll finally be loved. So we think, well, I did something wrong, it wasn't my fault. I'm feeling this way because I'm not good enough, I did something wrong, I'm not smart enough. And if you're a meditator, oh, I wasn't mindful enough. I hear that. I wasn't loving, I didn't have enough loving kindness. There's always some deficiency. And excessive perfectionism is often a path, excessive, an extreme version to depression, anxiety, addiction, what's called life paralysis. Life paralysis refers to the missed opportunities because we're too afraid to do something because we might fail or appear imperfect. It's the different ways we may not have followed our loves and our dreams because we're afraid of failing, making mistakes, and disappointing others. In our culture, there is so much pressure about the message over and over again is to excel, to be good, to be better than, to be the best. It's not about enjoying something anymore, but about being special, the best, the most. And this, of course, is impossible for all of us to be the best at everything. And yet often when we're less than best, we give up. We don't feel good enough. Because as an artist and teaching art and talking to people in a lot of different circumstances, writers and musicians, that often people have given up something they love because at some point they were pressured to pursue it in the sense of being good or competing, succeeding, and they lost the inner motivation, the inner enjoyment, the inner inspiration that actually was the source of the original impulse. So this is from Brené again. To overcome perfectionism, we need to be able to acknowledge our vulnerabilities to the universal experiences of shame and judgment and blame. When we become more loving and compassionate with ourselves, we begin to practice shame and resilience, and we can embrace our imperfections. It is the process of embracing our imperfections that we find our truest gifts, courage, compassion, and connection. So when we relinquish this search for perfection and really come back to our humanity of imperfection, the actual true reality of imperfection, we start to become real and authentic. Anna Quinlan says, the thing that is really hard and really amazing is giving up being perfect and beginning the work of becoming yourself. And our spiritual path is a profound level of becoming ourself, of finding out who and what we really are here and now. And while we're seeking to be better, to improve, we're actually missing who we are, what's happening in the here and now. And when we stop the striving towards something else, we can acknowledge a very tender and beautiful and wondrous and shared vulnerability and humanness. Pema Chodron often talks about this shaky tenderness within, that we spend so much time shielding and trying to avoid. And this is actually the real dynamic origin of compassion and love. We begin to look around and see it in everyone. And this vulnerability invites a kind of courage to move towards what we know to be true, and to be more honest and to reach out to each other. And that leads to a connection and compassion with not just all of humanity, but all of sentience. And when we know that the shameful or difficult or painful experiences of our life are the realities of being human, we can open up more and more to the fullness and completeness of our being. And know that life can change. What in Buddhism is called the eight worldly winds, praise and blame, pain and pleasure, gain and loss, success and failure. And we can begin to not be carried away by them. And we can begin to connect and relinquish our isolation. And we can begin the daily practice of kindness, that warm sense of affectionate understanding and accepting of our suffering. And to embrace the imperfection is summed up, some of you know this, the beautiful line from Leonard Cohen. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. When we not acknowledge our cracks, the light starts to appear. So in the time we have left, I want to introduce you to one of the practices of working with the sense of perfectionism and to allow the embracing of imperfection. And this is self-forgiveness practice. Forgiveness practice is basic to Buddhist practice, but often people don't learn about it. You learn about metta and loving kindness, you learn about mindfulness, but maybe not as much about forgiveness. By the way, Bob Stahl and I are going to leave a day long on forgiveness in June, just so you know here. So what is forgiveness? It's learning to give healing attention to oneself. Tarbox says it's letting go of the protective armoring of hate, blame that encases the heart. It's releasing self-aversion. And Jack Kornfield says forgiveness means giving up all hope of a better past. So there's a sort of courage, not a sort of, there's a definite courage and bravery and this willingness to give ourselves forgiveness. Again, it's not forgetfulness. It's simply the warmth of acknowledging our humanness, our imperfection, and our suffering around that. So I would like to invite you to consider right now something perhaps in the recent, maybe today, doesn't have to be a big thing, today or recently, some way in which you did something or said something or felt you had forgotten something or made some mistake that you feel a little bad about. See if you can find something where you're maybe caught in a little self-judgment, a little self-blame, some sort of rejection, some sort of sense of a confirmation of my inadequacy and not good enoughness. one of the daily transgressions of life. Perhaps you feel a little shame or guilt. I'm going to offer you in a few moments some phrases. Last week I offered some different phrases for self-compassion. Tonight we're doing self-forgiveness. So the key element in allowing this forgiveness is to actually contact your suffering and vulnerability around this. This is key. This is the essential place where we can meet the undiluted pain, the ouch of this experience, rather than covering it up, distracting ourselves, going off into the storyline. Can you feel the ouch? Tar Brach sometimes calls it a soul sadness as well. The pain of self-judgment, the burning of shame, the unease of guilt. Maybe there's sometimes a little contempt or disdain for ourselves. And I'd also like you to, I mentioned this last week, offer yourself a little gesture, it can be very subtle, a gesture of kindness, physically a gesture of kindness or comfort or soothing, maybe just how you hold your hands together, sort of that, and maybe placing your hand on your heart, maybe just a little affectionate pat to the leg. To some simple gesture. So as I read these phrases, listen to them as I say them, and then you can perhaps say it to yourself silently. I allow myself to be imperfect. I allow myself to make mistakes. I allow myself to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive myself. I allow myself to be imperfect. I allow myself to make mistakes. I allow myself to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive myself. Just maybe softening and offering a sense of forgiven. Forgiven to yourself. And I'm going to end this with a poem called On My Way to Yes. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life, all the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those color, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and then I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.